Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Cabot Creamery, celebrating 100 years of being a dairy farm family-owned cooperative. Learn more at cabotcheese.coop. That's cabotcheese.coop. This week on a special bonus episode of Meat in 3, we find out why the bacon, egg, and cheese, that classic bodega sandwich, is popping up on menus of New York's trendiest restaurants.
We did a few iterations of it, and I was trying to fancify it. We tried the sausage, egg, and cheese, and then we tried to put shamula sauce on it. We used feta cheese, and we just like taking ingredients of the Mediterranean, if you will, and try to infuse it. But for me, it was like a car wreck.
Tune in to hear about the wild journey of the bacon, egg, and cheese, from deli to fine dining, on Meat in 3, HRN's weekly food news roundup, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show tracing the stories behind your favorite Asian foods. I'm your host, Linda Liu. We are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, we dig deep on an aspect of Asian cuisine or culture by having a conversation with a passionate people from the world of Asian food. Today, we are sinking into artisanal tofu with Paul Ng. Earlier this year, Paul rebooted Feng An, his family's tofu shop, located in Manhattan's Chinatown. The shop has been run by the Ng family for three generations, since 1933. Although Paul grew up in and around the tofu shop, he's done a great deal of many other things before coming back to the family business. Paul graduated with an architectural degree and worked for the federal government for a couple years. And then, sensing a need for more creative work, Paul embarked on a series of other careers over the span of 25 years that led him to music, design, art direction, advertising, and photography. And it was photography that brought him to Russia, where he lived in Moscow for a decade, and where he met his wife and started a family. After returning to the U.S. and seeing his family business close in 2017, he decided to revive the store using all the experience he collected from past careers. And once again, tofu has become the cornerstone of his life. All right, Paul, how did your family first get started in the tofu business back in 1933?
Hi, Linda, and thank you for having me on the show. I don't know. My grandfather was sort of a reluctant partner in this tofu business. I guess he had some friends who opened up a tofu shop, mm-hmm. or wanted to open up a tofu shop, and they kind of drafted him in.
Peer pressured into it?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, so a lot of these stories are kind of like hearsay.
Yeah, passed down from
passed
family
down,
members.
You know, yeah, so they were like, you know, some maybe some legends. You know? So apparently the store is named after my grandfather, even though his name wasn't Feng An. It was one of those things that they said it was one of his names. Mm. So his partners was like, look, you know, you've got to do this business with us. We named it after you.
Wow.
So he was like, okay. So that's how he started the tofu business.
Yeah.
With the partners.
Oh, amazing. And his Chinese name, Feng An. What does that mean?
It means grand peace.
Okay, so yeah. It's a very auspicious
yes.
name to, what? Yeah.
it's actually a quite, I think, often used name because it, you know, anybody wants a business wants some kind of grand piece.
Mm-hmm. Very fair. Yeah. And did you work in the shop growing up then?
I did. You know, sometimes after school, in my high school years, I used to work in the evenings, mm-hmm. to help close up the shop and, you know, do some extra things. Yeah, yeah. So I did, yeah, in the summers.
And you have a number of other siblings that also worked
Correct.
In the shop.
But they were much older than I were. Mm. The closest one is David, which was 11 years older than me.
And, oh, wow. You are the baby.
I am the baby. So everybody was an adult before, you know, I showed up, and or more or less an adult. And most of them had either worked in the shop or was working in the shop and, you know, fully working as an adult, you know. So it's quite a different experience than I had.
Yeah. You know. At the time, did you love it? Did you want to just follow in their footsteps?
No. No. I mean, you know, being in also a big family because I had four other older siblings and my parents in a full business that was, you know, consuming their lives, basically, mm-hmm. You know, I had the least say in anything, you know, but especially this store. So it was just like, well, we have to do this because it's our store. In the middle of the night, whatever it took, we had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't quite keen on the whole thing.
Yeah, and being the youngest, it kind of sounds like you got to escape that a little bit, or you had the choice where...
Well, I escaped the major responsibilities, mm-hmm. but I didn't escape the chores of the shop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now you've come back to it.
Yes,
what,
exactly.
Yeah, please tell me about your decision here, your decision to answer the call of Tofu after the original store closed. And
well, it wasn't a decision. I mean, it wasn't so decisive, you know. Mm. It wasn't one of those things where I woke up in the morning and decided this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
It was a series of steps and over time that I kind of
warmed up to it. Okay.
I'm still warming up to it.
As the owner and proprietor.
Yeah, as the owner and the proprietor. I still am kind of warming up to it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it was one of those things where I think mostly what propelled me into taking on the responsibility of reopening it was having children and starting a family.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the same sort of reluctancy that my grandfather sort of had, same reluctancy my father had.
Mm.
I mean, he came out of the army and wanted to do something completely different.
Yeah.
You know, and... you know, my grandfather sort of convinced him otherwise, and then he had a child, and then he sort of reluctantly took on the role of the store. It seems like a family trait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's cool that you got to experience a bunch of other careers in the process, too.
Yeah. or else I would have always probably thought what could have been, you know?
Yeah. But, oh, now you get to answer both sides of the coin,
yeah,
I guess.
Exactly.
So what are the changes you've made to this new iteration of Fong An?
Well, I sort of went back to basics and stripped it down to the things that we did the best, you
mm-hmm.
know. I mean, I literally went from item to item and thought, no, I don't want to do that either because it wasn't something that I necessarily missed. I mean, when the store closed, I began to think about the things that I would miss.
Mm, mm-hmm.
You know? So
you already organically started that
process.
Yeah,
so I was like, I'm going to make the things that I miss.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to make the things that I don't miss.
Right.
You know? So that it was quite simple that way. And also I knew that there were, I mean, over time also, many friends, old clients, just people who knew about the store said, you know, you should strip down and do the simple stuff, the stuff that you did best,
mm-hmm.
without spreading yourself thin and, you know, and concentrate on those things. And they would name those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So what are those things?
The tofu, right? I mean, that's
100%.
That's the base, right? That's
mm-hmm.
the base. And with the soy milk and the tofu pudding,
mm-hmm.
you know, the rice cakes, the rice cakes,
mm-hmm.
Some of the herbal teas, and our grass jelly. You know, those were, it doesn't seem like a whole lot of items, but they're solid items that can be expanded on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's talk about the tofu. What kind of tofu are you making, or how would you describe it?
Well, currently we're making only two types right now. We're just starting again, you know, so we're making a firm and a soft tofu. I mean, it's your basic tofu, but the difference is it's fresh, you know. I mean, it used to be a long time ago that the only type of tofu that you get was fresh tofu. Now you have all box tofu.
Yeah, that's, I guess, unfortunately, that's what I'm familiar with.
Yeah, because that's what it is now. Yeah. Because you get everything, you know, it has a long shelf life.
It does,
you know, and you could buy it anytime and store it for up to a month without, you know, any worry, and then use it at will, you know. Whereas fresh tofu, you should use it within a week.
Within a week. Okay, yeah. Cool. Good to know.
Yeah. And the huge difference between the two is, you know, fresh anything tastes better.
Yeah.
Just tastes better by far. But there's a reason why. Because boxed tofu, in order for it to have this long shelf life without preservatives, has to go through a process where it's superheated in the package. That all the bacteria get zapped. About 7 minutes of high temperature steaming will kill all the bacteria so that the boxed tofu can last for about 60 days. But that high temperature also kills any flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah. The longer you heat anything, anything.
Right, right.
Flavor
or
disappears.
Like all the healthy cells in
yeah,
there.
Exactly. If you took like say broccoli and boiled it for 7 minutes. You know, and like really.
It's like hello school cafeteria.
Yeah, exactly. Mush.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
How did you decide on these recipes? Were you familiar like making the tofu when you were a child, or did you have to just recreate everything from scratch?
I wasn't familiar with any of it. None of it. I mean, right. I did some of the work.
Yeah.
I mean, like.
And all of the old equipment was gone from like the old store too, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Everything was gone. So I went about it just like everybody else would. I Googled it.
Yeah, hello Google.
Hello Google and YouTube.
How to make tofu.
Exactly.
Really?
But I also went back to, so there was the part that people that used to work for us, and my parents, my brothers, all knew. They knew parts of it. Knew parts of the recipe. They knew the recipe, but they didn't understand the science necessarily behind it. Someone taught them, you put this, 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 and this together, and you do this to it, and this is what comes
out.
Yeah,
just a traditional way of following rules.
Exactly. But the measurements were, there were no particular measurements. It was always like a cup of this, a spoon of that.
Such an Asian way.
Yeah, you know, a dash of that. Oh, just about almost that amount, you know, like that kind of, just that, like that, you know, so.
Just sense it, feel it. It comes with experience.
Exactly. And I would say, well, why did you do that? Why did you add this part? Because, you know, this is what your father said.
I see.
And I said, where did he get this from? There was this old man that used to say, put this stuff in it, put this vinegar in it. And they were like, so no one actually knew why. It just got passed down from one person to another person. So we've always done it.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, but so I took it and I kind of backwards engineered it to get to a point where I understand it. Now, I removed that vinegar from way back when.
Okay. I'm like, did you test it? Did you?
I did.
Okay. So you had your set of scientific experiments.
Which took forever because the process.
So many variables.
There's so many variables. It's just like, okay, what happens if I took this out?
Yeah.
Oh, this happens.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you know. and it's still going on now, actually. Even down to how you mix the, like say, you know, mix the particular batter.
I see.
If you mix it kind of like, you know, slow and lackadaisical, it won't rise. You know?
Right. So if you're thinking about something else and not focusing, the tofu will
If you've got a pinched nerve, carpal tunnel syndrome hand going on, you get a little bit stiffer and it's a different product.
And tofu responds accordingly. Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
And are you writing things down this time? Are you following your family's ways?
I've written. I haven't a final.
Right, because you're still perfecting
it. I'm still perfecting it. So I've written it down, but it's still wrong. So if anybody would take a look at my notes, they would follow it, they would get not the right thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it's still kind of developing.
I see. This also just reminds me of Breaking Bad. When he's, Walter White is trying to find that perfect formula.
Exactly.
And once he has it, then he'll bring on like a Jesse or something.
Yeah,
right? And then you'll take over the world.
Yes.
Okay, exactly. With your product. Got it. And could you just walk us through how your tofu is made? Like what steps and how long it takes?
There's the part where, let's begin right at the beginning. Yeah. You have the type of soybean, right? Mm-hmm. That is, it's not just any soybean. It's a soybean with high protein that is good for making tofu. We get it from a supplier and he, mm-hmm. he supplies.
Is it grown in the U.S. or?
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. also, the U.S. is the largest grower of soybeans. Mm-hmm. So it supplies most of the world.
I see.
Thus, number two would be Brazil.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, number two would be Brazil. So even in China, a lot of the soy comes from the U.S. So most of our soy we get from the U.S.
Right.
We get locally because the further it has to travel to you, the more money it will cost. Mm-hmm. They have beans in the Midwest, but if we got beans in the Midwest versus beans from New Jersey, it'll be a lot more expensive because mm-hmm. of the distance it travels.
Mm-hmm.
Our soybeans are non-GMO; they're not organic. Right now, because mm-hmm. it's kind of cost prohibitive to a lot of people in the population.
Mm-hmm.
So we take that soybean, we soak it. It's dried. So we soak it overnight, at least 6 hours, until it soaks up water and expands and softens.
Okay.
So that usually is overnight. And then the next day we grind it, and then we...
Are you hand grinding or is there a machine?
No, it's a machine, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Hand grind it would take forever. Actually, my grandfather, back in my grandfather's
days,
was hand ground.
Okay,
because that was the only thing that they had, literally. So it was one of those kind of round things where you just kind of had to go round and round until you grounded it into pulp, basically.
Right.
So then you separate you cook the slurry. And then mm-hmm. you separate the soy milk from the pulp, right? And the pulp in Japanese is called okara.
Okay.
Yeah. So then you're left with just the soy milk. The soy milk is either, you can either just have it like that,
mm-hmm.
As soy milk,
mm-hmm.
That's what soy milk is. And
yeah.
then if you want tofu, then you would coagulate it with, your typical coagulant from way back when was sea salt.
Oh.
So it would curdle it, and then it would become curds, like cheese. And then you would put it in a cheesecloth exactly like cheese and press out the water, and it firms the curd, the tofu itself. Depending on how much water you press out, it would be the firm tofu or soft tofu.
Ah, yeah. I see.
And that's it. That's basically... tofu, but and we also make tofu pudding, which we don't take out any water.
Yeah, that's so silky. How?
So it's basically the same thing as tofu.
I see.
But it never gets broken up and never gets put into a cheesecloth and then pressed out in the press. So it just remains in the barrel with all the water that we had put into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so smooth and silky, because it forms in the barrel exactly as it was poured.
And what part of this process is the most like physical for you?
Um, Well, I guess it's handling the hot soy milk. Once, because you have to handle it hot to make tofu, and you have to handle it hot to make the tofu pudding. You have to handle it hot to make the soy milk. And that part is the most physically demanding because it comes out. And we handle it in like 5-gallon buckets.
Wow.
Right? Which is not terribly heavy, but...
Well, you're getting your workout in.
Yeah, but if you, our production is kind of low right now because we're not doing the enough wholesale yet. But if you had to do if we were doing wholesale, you multiply that bucket times, I don't know, can be up to 50 of them.
Okay.
Right. So depending on how big your production is, it can be quite a few of those 5-gallon buckets.
Yeah. At that point, we'll need to clone you.
Yeah, exactly.
Is your favorite part cutting the tofu?
Cutting the tofu? No, I mean, you know, in the store, my brother, he had retired, and I kind of pulled him back
in. Wow, and you pull him back in.
Pull him back in to kind of help out and rebooting it. Uh-huh. The other part of that is that his daughter is also, Tiana, is also part of the business too now.
Oh, nice.
You know, so it's actually fourth generation in there. So he's helping out in that department.
I see. He gets to cut the tofu.
Yeah, he gets to cut the tofu. He gets to do a lot of that stuff too. You know, I mean, I'm also doing I'm doing the rice cake. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
Oh, that's your specialty.
Yeah, that's
right?
My specialty. But you know, ultimately, all of this is interchangeable.
Yeah, all hands on deck, everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. So we're going to take a really quick break and we'll be right back with more Feast Meets West.
Okay.
Cabot Creamery is proud to be celebrating 100 years making the world's finest dairy products. Cabot's award-winning cheddars and other dairy products stand apart because of their farmers' tireless dedication to quality and freshness, to healthy land and a sustainable future. A century after they started this journey, Cabot's farmer owners still know what matters most, family and community. The simple truth that we're stronger together than we are apart. That delicious products are the reward of a job well done. That when you love what you do this much, the best is always still to come.
Join Heritage Radio Network on Monday, November 11th, for a raucous feast to toast a decade of food radio. Our 10th anniversary Bacchanal is a rare gathering of your favorite chefs, mixologists, storytellers, thought leaders, and culinary masterminds. We'll salute the inductees of the newly minted HRN Hall of Fame, who embody our mission to further equity, sustainability, and deliciousness. Join us to explore the beautiful Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, where you'll taste and imbibe to your heart's content, and bid on once-in-a-lifetime experiences and tasty gifts for any budget at our silent auction. Join the party. Tickets are available now at heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
Welcome back. You're listening to Feast Meets West. So Paul, what's your experience been so far as a small business owner in Chinatown now?
I don't know. I'm still kind of processing the whole thing.
When did the store officially open?
It opened about 2 months ago.
Yeah, so quite fresh.
Yeah, it's quite fresh. I mean, there are times when I was like, when is this all going to end?
What do you mean? Like the newness or?
The work.
Just all of it. Do you feel like you were somewhat prepared having seen your family handle the business in the past?
I mean, yes and no. I mean,
Chinatown's different now.
Chinatown is really different now. And that's where I'm trying to find where this shop is going to be. You know, it's quite different. And I'm also, you know, there was expectations from everybody of what it's supposed to be, where it's supposed to go, you know. I have a different vision than what, like, say, my parents did, right? Mm. Because obviously Chinatown has changed.
Yeah.
You know, so there are old customers and new customers. So there's... but at the end of the day, you know, it feels good to do it. It does feel mm-hmm. good to do it. Although sometimes it feels like school. You know, it feels
why?
Like you're waking up every day early just to go in and just like, when is this going to end? Is when summer vacation going to
end? Oh, I see.
And you realize there's no summer vacation.
Not this time.
Not this year, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, so you mentioned, you know, longtime customers, mm-hmm. The older crowd. What are their expectations and how is it different from the younger generation in Chinatown?
Well, it depends. It's not everybody, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, obviously there are people who came in and thought, you know, pricing-wise at least, that we were... asking too much. Mm-hmm.
So how's it priced now compared to what it was before?
It's double.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's it's
quite... Since 1933.
Yeah, since it's double. But
yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that when it was half the amount it was,
mm-hmm.
we weren't paying the bills. We weren't paying, we were, you know, my mom, any kind of external shock, my mom had to, like, dig in her pockets,
oh my God.
You know.
That just sounds illogical.
You know, property tax, you know. Oh, property tax. Oh, we don't have the money. Someone's got to pull it out of their pockets or from some other source, which wasn't meant to be. So the business wasn't self-supporting,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it really, and it came down to the fact that the price was way too low. I mean... One of the items that we don't do anymore is rice noodles.
Mm.
So rice noodles, hua fan, mm-hmm. right, is the same wholesale price as it has been for the last 20 years. Right? So it's just like, wait, 20 years ago it was 75 cents, and today competition says it's 75 cents.
Mm-hmm.
How can that be? Labor, everything has risen so much. It's impossible, you know. So doing that type of business, no matter how much some people wish we were to do it again, just we would be closed again.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right? Yeah. And I guess when you speak to your older customers, and I mean, they come to the understanding, right?
Sure. Some of them do, some of them don't, you know. Some of them absolutely do because they realize, you know, it's not a matter of price is necessary. Price is necessary. You know, inflation is what it is. But also, if you want quality, you know, mm-hmm. and the care and the product, then you come to us. If you're strictly about price alone...
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you have options.
There are other options.
Yeah.
And
what would you say the younger generation is looking for?
The younger generation is looking for basically the same thing as the older generation, but in a much more. The difference is like the stuff that we make. It's not that other people don't make, right? We make it. I think, in my estimation, better than most people. But we also, it's also about service and also the quality. And honestly, being clean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because a lot, you know, somebody will compare us and say, oh, well, we get tofu pudding from this other guy. Yeah, but he's selling it on the street. You know, I mean, he's selling it on the street, you know, and it's. In an open stall, you know.
It's not it's a quite different experience.
It's a different experience, right? It's understandable. It's fine. That is fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think there's a level of comfort also, too. And also knowing the quality of stuff. I mean, I specifically choose it no matter if it's expensive, like, or not.
Mm-hmm.
As long as if it's right, you know. Like, there's this pickled radish that we use as a topping on one of the puddings. And there are other cheaper options, mm-hmm. you know, and bulk options.
Yeah.
But the one that I use tastes the best. I would eat, this is the one that I would eat. So mm-hmm. why would I substitute anything else?
Right, to go out of the way to get that experience. Like, that's worth it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, tell me about the toppings you have for the tofu pudding.
So the toppings we have, we have some savory. We have one savory option, and it mm-hmm. comes with all the specific toppings of. We have a pickled radish. We have some fried shallots. Mm-hmm. We have dried shrimp. We have chili. We have scallions, and we have sesame oil in it.
Would you say these are traditional type toppings, or you kind of came up with your own concoctions?
No, this is pretty traditional. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it's not something that I did delve deeply into it at some point, you know, and I just forget where it necessarily came from. Mm-hmm. But most of it's Taiwanese.
I see.
Yeah, so it's either Taiwanese or most of it. It's that kind of. I saw it. It looked good. Mm. Let's do it. I tried it myself. You know, I've tried other people's. I've went to places and I've tried theirs, and I just, you know, literally I've went from place to place, everywhere in New York, to look for tofu pudding mm-hmm. and the way other people do it and taste it and see what I would do better or differently. You know, I'll be like, oh, the tofu pudding isn't quite as good as I would mm-hmm. want it.
Yeah, your ideal version.
My ideal version of it. So, but that's it. It's just like sushi, right? Yeah. It's not the fish, it's the rice that matters. You know, I mean, the fish counts, but the if you have a bad rice underneath
it takes away completely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's the same here. You know, the tofu pudding has to be good.
Perfect.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
Really?
It does. It really does.
And what's like the most popular item that people are ordering? Is it the tofu pudding with a particular topping type? Or
yeah,
is it?
Well, we have two, because when we first opened, I had just toppings and a lot of people to choose exactly what they want.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would just kind of
lose it.
Yeah, like, lose it, exactly. They would just stand there and be like,
let me take 10 minutes
exactly.
and get back to
you. I'm like,
you
know what? This is not going to work. We're going to have to make some combos for them to
yes, humans like restricted choice.
Exactly. So I made three sweet ones, combinations, three different combinations, okay. right? And the one that's selling the most is the first one, because I suspect it's the first one
uh-huh.
on the list.
Yep.
You know, I called it Can't Go Wrong.
Okay.
So, you know, it's the answer to what should I get? Well, you should get number one, because you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
That's good. That's good marketing.
Yeah. Red beans, grass jelly, and taro balls. Yeah. So that's actually the number one seller on the sweet side. And the savory, I only have one option for now.
Yeah.
And it's all that above, because it tastes so good all together.
Yes, I tried it. It's excellent.
So, I mean, a lot of people would say vegans would take out the shrimp part, but it's equally as tasty. Yeah. Or people who don't like spicy would take out the chili. You know? But it still tastes, you know.
Yum.
Balance of things.
So I noticed that there's also like a couple other Chinatown shops with amazing like family generational brands like Numhua, Pearl River, and now it's also been passed on to say like the younger generation.
Yes.
Do you like talk to those guys at all? Is there
Sure. I talk to Wilson at Numhua all the time. He's been sort of like our number one supporter. Even since after we closed, you know, he was just always saying, you guys should be open, you know, and you should do it. And, you know, and he's always thrown help my way. Like,
Are there like best practices that you guys can share just kind of being in similar positions or
meaning
like, you know, working with an older brand that's been around for a long time, and dealing with both the longtime fans and then the evolving Chinatown and younger generations?
I think you always got to go forward, no matter what. I mean, because that's what it is. I mean, Fang'an, the way it is now, wasn't the way it was in 1933, but it wasn't. But in the early 2000s, wasn't the way it was in 1933. In the 1990s, 1980s, 1970s, wasn't the way it was in 1933. Mm-hmm. It had evolved all that time, you know. So people forget that. It all evolves and it all kind of goes forward. I mean, you bring you some of the tradition. Obviously, the foods come from a long heritage, but you still bring it forward in the way you produce it, the way you sell it. But, you know, the quality remains, right? Mm-hmm. So quality is the best practice. You have to have quality before you can even move it forward. You know? You can move it forward by changing how you do things, but it ultimately comes down to, you know, does it taste good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you guys feel very, like, sacred about the brand? Or open to experimentation with it?
I'm open to experimentation. Mm. Whether people would necessarily want that, I'm not sure. You know, I mean, I have some ideas for experimentation. But it might not necessarily be the right environment. I mean, Fang'an as a brand in itself will be somewhat traditional, and they will have some experimentation. You know, like I do a rice cake, I do green tea matcha rice cake.
Yes.
You know, because I realized that the base
hashtag matcha.
Yeah. So you can do a lot of this. You can change it up because I found it. It's easy, you know, and taste. Not that it's easy, but I was just like, why didn't nobody think
like,
of this?
Like, why not?
Yeah. Why not? Mm-hmm. You know, it tastes good. And you know, I have children. I would make it and be like, here, taste it. Do you like it?
Oh, good.
You know, and they'd be like, yeah, if they like it, I know, you know. If likes it, if other people within my family like it, they'll like, oh, well, it'll sell, you know. But it should, but it usually doesn't, like, sometimes I hear some older customers come in and they're like, but I was like that when I went to, you know, we're like, well, that's kind of strange. That green rice cake, what is that?
You know? You're like, so, pushing it too far.
Yeah, I mean, I get it though, because when I went to Taiwan and I was like, we went to one of these tofu pudding places and I was offered toppings, you know. At first I was like, no, I don't want no toppings, just give me the plain tofu pudding, you know, and syrup on top of it. And they were like, you're in Taiwan, you know.
This is not how we eat it anymore.
You could try it. Just try it. It's not going to kill you.
Right.
I'm like, right. And the minute I put it in my mouth and ate it, I was like, revelation. I'm like, oh, right.
Yeah, you can do it like
you
this.
You can do it like this. Ding, light bulb.
That's amazing. Give everything a shot, I guess.
Yep.
Sure. Do you feel like, well, you're running a specialty shop. Do you feel like specialty shops or like artisanal versions of different foods are making a comeback?
Yeah, I would suppose so. I mean, it's, you know, it's strange.
I guess people are seeking out, like, the best, you know, the best quality, the best version of this one thing.
Yeah. I mean,
More and more so.
Whether it's making a comeback or not, I'm not sure, right? I know that literally since we've opened, there were two other companies that had tofu shops near us.
Okay.
Right? There were small tofu makers. In fact, their beginnings were kind of sprouted from our business. So my cousin had ventured out to do his own business, and then he sold that business, and that business sprouted into two other businesses, and they were both tofu shops in Chinatown. Mm-hmm. And within the 2 months that we opened, both of those tofu shops closed down. Not because we gave them any competition, but because they were doing an old type of business where the numbers were low, and any external shock, like, say, equipment failure and they had to replace equipment or rent or any of that, they were done.
Mm-hmm.
So we're the last remaining tofu shop in Manhattan that I know of. So,
yeah.
And I know that, you know, there is no substitute for fresh tofu, just like there isn't fresh, no substitute for fresh fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. Whether everybody knows that or not, I'm not sure. I don't know.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like when you lose something, that's when you really feel that gap in your heart or your stomach.
Yeah. And I literally, I go and compare all the box tofus. I think I bought all the box tofu in this, on this planet just to really make sure that...
Yeah, you're like, we still do it better.
Yeah, we still do it better, you know? We still definitely do it better.
Yeah, so you definitely need to still be there. Thanks. So what have you applied thus far from your past careers to the business now? What were some of, like, the top things that...
Well, the redesign and the renovation of the space was definitely from my architectural background.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had, you know, laid out and pretty much designed it and spec'd all the materials.
Yeah.
You know.
That degree came in real handy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not licensed, so I couldn't do it myself, but... And I definitely couldn't do it myself because I didn't work in the field that long to know everything about it. But the design part and understanding space, really helped. Advertising market and marketing and design helped. You know, the sign. I had some art school hipsters paint my sign.
Love it. Yeah.
So they were painting my sign, and I remember my neighbor from across the street, the car mechanic, he came over and stood next to me looking at them, incredulous at them painting the sign. And I'm like, why? I could do it faster than them. I could do it faster with a roller.
Oh, my God.
And I said to myself, I'm like, yeah, sure you can. But, you know, so it's kind of like that melding of worlds.
Yeah.
I mean, all the different worlds.
Wow.
So, yeah, so the art and design came in on that. The music, I actually started playing music again just to save my sanity. So that's kind of that's
good.
Coming.
Yeah, a healthy balance there.
So, and the photography, I'm sure I'm going to take...
That's going to come in
handy.
That's
going to come in handy.
Real
soon. Yeah, exactly.
For the tofu catalog. Can't wait to see it. So is the Ng family excited to see the new reboot?
Yeah, you know, sure. It's
Well, your brother's there, so...
My brother's there.
Totally involved.
Yeah, he's involved until he retires again.
Yeah. Until he remembers he's retired.
Yeah.
He's like, wait a minute. Paul make
I'm
me do?
Going on a cruise. I'm not doing this. You're making tofu. You
yeah,
do.
Yeah.
I've already done my time.
Right.
You know, I guess everybody's excited, you know, but also everybody's kind of, you know, once you're in the business again, it's like you have a different sort of mind. You worry about everything. My mom, like, you know, she's retired. She's like nearly 90 years old. You know, she was at some wedding a couple of weeks ago, and she got wind that we didn't have any more paper bags. And she called me in the middle. She had ducked out to go to the bathroom to call me and goes, did you get paper bags? And I'm like, don't worry about it.
I got this.
It's just paper bags. And even if we don't have paper bags, we'll find something else. Don't worry about it.
And
it was like, are you in the toilet? Calling us about paper bags at this wedding? Like, yeah.
Yeah, you just can't let go. It's so integral to your family. That's
yeah.
Amazing.
So, and she'll be like, she'll like lose sleep. I mean, she's not there. She doesn't go there every day, and she doesn't go there hardly, you know, because there's really not a whole lot she can do.
Mm-hmm.
you know. But she does come and hang out, but still, she worries about every little thing, you know.
Oh, that's really sweet of her, though. So where do you see yourself taking Fong On in the next few years?
Well, currently I'm trying to get everything stabilized and, mm-hmm. and you know, develop some new products and trying to understand and trying to model it out so that I could actually maybe even open another shop. You know, the thing about our shop is in a particular part of Chinatown that it's neither here or there. It's in the crossroads of the new, the old, and the completely different. and it's not the best location, but it is our sort of our headquarters in where we used to manufacture tofu.
Right.
So, I mean, if the idea would be, yeah, sure, to model everything out, get down the products, expand on the products, and then possibly open another location.
Yeah, that sounds great. All right, before we wrap up the show, I have a round of quick fire questions for you. Okay. And these are meant to be just fun and fast, so just share what comes to mind first.
Sure.
For the doufu fa, the tofu pudding, sweet or savory topping?
Savory.
I will go same on that one too now. Where have you had the best tofu outside of your store?
Best tofu outside my store.
Well, we know that doesn't really exist, but
actually, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I mean, you know, it's when you're eating that kind of food someplace else, you're it's the overall dish. You know, I didn't literally go to some other person's store and bite a piece of just tofu. You know, that's the way you compare it, by just eating with nothing.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the last dish you made or ate with tofu?
Last night I made a tofu with minced chicken and peas. Yeah.
Sounds fresh. What's a favorite restaurant or shop that you frequent in Chinatown?
Favorite shop that I frequent in Chinatown?
Or a restaurant.
Restaurant I favorite in town.
I guess having like grown up in Chinatown and now coming back to it.
Actually, I don't frequent a whole lot of places. I don't. Yeah, I mean, I hardly frequent Chinatown places. It's funny, when I lived away in China, from I lived away, I crave Chinatown food, you know, I crave those places. Now I'm living back in Chinatown, I try to always eat away from China.
I understand that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so when you were living away from Chinatown, what were some Chinatown cravings?
Tofu. Okay, living in Moscow, literally when I was living in Moscow, I craved tofu, and I found like tofu, Russian tofu.
And what's that like?
It's kind of more sour and a little harder. It comes in like, but it's, you know, it filled my craving. You know, I would always go to this one shop that would always have it. You know, and sometimes they wouldn't have it, and I'd be like, you know, 'cause I lived in Moscow for 10 years, so I really craved like a lot of good Chinese food, you know. And actually, there were some good places,
So how much tofu are you eating these days?
Oh, I at least eat it 2 or 3 times a week. But that's not the only, I mean, I also drink soy milk. I eat a lot of it also simply just to make sure that the quality is good. You know, I test everything, even though sometimes I'm sick of my own stuff because I eat so much of it.
Yeah.
I still test it because I really need to know if it's good.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's the sign of a good shop owner.
Yeah.
That wraps up our show for tonight. Thank you, Paul, for sharing your stories.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. And thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. As always, we appreciate your support, and it would mean so much if you could leave us a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back next week That's October 30th with another awesome conversation from the world of Asian food. Feast Meets West is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to find out more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.